All right. So, first of all, totally random that today, in YNET at least, I assume this data is from the health min the Israeli Misad HaBriyot, the health ministry. So I assume it's accurate and it's pretty good. But based on this, requests for abortion in Israel are record high. Any of requests to terminate pregnancy, right? So in Israel, if you want to get if you want to terminate a pregnancy, you have to request. And there's an agency that has to, a VAD that has to sign off on it. So of those requests, anyone want to guess the percentage of requests that were approved?
Like 99%.
99.5%.
That is like
very
99%.
Good.
That's
that
high.
Is like 99%. You're right. If it was 99%, you would have been wrong. You were correct. Of those, 50 of those applications were made by married women and 6.8% by women under 19. So just point out, 50. I think you get automatic approval if I think you're under 18 and you get pregnant. They'll automatically allow
no
you
questions
to get an abortion.
Asked.
No questions asked. If I mean, I think everybody here is no questions asked based on these numbers. I wonder who the 0.5% was that got denied. Like, what do they do wrong? I just want to point out that this is, again, I sort of mentioned this as an aside last week, but in Israel, people abort for just about anything.
Well, but what is a total number?
It has a total number.
The country of, you know,
yeah, hold on. I should have looked up the actual. So according to this, among Jewish women, 8.1 out of 1,000 women has sought to terminate a pregnancy, and in Arab women, it's 6 per 1,000.
So 0.6%, 0.8%?
Yeah. And also interesting, of those, 85% of those, or 86 really, percent of those were made during the first trimester, 12.8% were done during the second trimester, and 1.7% were in the last trimester.
Okay.
Also, just
that,
interesting
that
to point
sense.
Out. And 30% of all those were made by women that have previously terminated their pregnancy. I don't think that's really interesting
that's
for
us.
But these are some numbers that are fascinating relative to at least what we have in America. Anyways. Or
wait,
might
what do
have.
We have. What do we have in there?
We have interesting politics.
We have interesting politics.
We have interesting
okay,
politics in America. Anyways, so let's go back to our sig over here. So last week, let's just do a quick, try to do a quick review of where we were last week. So we started off with this Mishnah. That's the Isha Shemikasha Leled, right? This woman that is having trouble giving birth. What do we do? Mechata, in other words, either she or the Uber is probably going to die. Right, we cut up the fetus, and we take him out limb from limb because chaya kod min lechayav, her life takes precedence. However, once yatsa hubo, as we defined, that's probably most of the head, or at least the big part of the head, then you can't touch anymore. Why? En dochin nefesh bipnei nefesh. Something happened that originally you we say chaya kod min lechayav. And then afterwards, we changed the word. We were talking about now instead of chayim, it's nefesh. And here we say endochi nefesh mipnei nefesh. We can't get rid of one life for the other. That was the first introductory mishnah to abortion. Again, we pointed out this mishnah is talking about the woman is going to die if we do not intervene. So it's not a question about the fetus. It's not a question about a fetus that has some sort of deformity that they might suffer from. It's not a question of a unwanted pregnancy. It's a question of the pregnancy will kill the mother. What do we do to help? We then have a Rambam.
It's not even the pregnancy in the Mishnah. It's the labor.
Labor, yeah.
Right?
Labor is going to kill the woman.
Labor
is going to kill the woman. I wonder if they had a way to abort while the woman before.
I have no idea.
What would they have done? All right. Anyways,
nothing that we would consider humane these days, probably.
Yeah, but that sounds also like how they got rid of this.
Yeah.
Anyways, the Rambam in Hilchos Rotzeach, towards the beginning, he says, Lefika choru chachamim shawashi mekasha leled, right, a woman who's a pregnant woman who's having a hard time giving birth, muto lechto chalba b'me'ah, you're allowed to cut the fetus while it's still inside of her, right? This is in the middle of Alachatet. And here he's talking about the halachas of rodef. And he says, while the fetus is inside, because I have this concept of rodef, because I have this concept of if you are trying to kill him, I can kill you first, therefore I'm allowed to kill a fetus who is endangering the life of its mother. However, which The conclusion is the same as the conclusion in the Mishnah. He adds a new logic. The Mishnah didn't really give us the logic. The Mishnah just told us, I guess it did give us the logic. It said, Chaya kol min chayav. Didn't really explain why. But it said, her life is more important than his life, or its life. Whereas the Rambam says, well, it's based off the principle of Odef. I know that I'm allowed to kill someone who's trying to kill somebody else. So same thing applies over here. I'm allowed to kill this fetus before it kills the mother.
Self-defense of a third party.
Yes, as you so eloquently said last week as well. However, right, once, however, this fetus sticks its head out, you cannot touch it because you cannot be doche a nefesh in front of an... Yes, and that, again, by the way, just pointing out, is the same lashon that the Mishnah used, right? The Mishnah originally said, we had a question of whether or not you can be doche chaya kodim chayav, right? And then the Mishnah switched to, we're talking about nefesh, not chayim. And the Rambam is at least consistent in the second half of the Mishnah that he calls it endochi nefesh ne nefesh. However, he does add zeh tiv os shel olam. This is the way of the world. This is natural processes.
So, what does this last word mean? What is he adding?
I think he's trying to explain the concept of endochi nefesh mipnei nefesh. Why do I argue endochi nefesh mipnei nefesh? Because
this principle,
yeah,
this is a natural principle
of hello. So far we see we have a Mishnah and we have a Rambam that discuss whether or not you're allowed to abort a fetus, and we are going to distinguish between a fetus that is a woman that has not yet started delivering versus one that has already versus a woman that the fetus already started emerging. If the fetus already started emerging, then we don't touch it, but beforehand we do. Unclear, we have different language as to why. All right.
Yes.
So, next, we want to move on to Shehorah Shulchan Aruch actually Paskin. So, Joshua told me that what are the chances I'm going to give a share on something in Choshen Mishpat? So, the first halacha today is from Choshen Mishpat. Lefikach. It's a highlighted part. Ha'ubla, Shemekash Leled. A woman, a pregnant woman that's having a hard time giving birth. You're allowed to cut the fetus inside of her. Ben besam ben beyad. Right, this again is directly quoting from the Rambam. Ben besam ben beyad, as he had said on the previous page.
Whether with some kind of poultice.
Whether you're basically doing it indirectly versus directly.
Like the sam is some kind of poison.
Yeah, you give her some sort of pill or some sort of medication to induce or to kill the fetus or something like that. The Bet Yosef, the Mechaber of Yosef Cairo, quotes the logic of the Rambam. He says, because he's being Rodef, just like the Rambam said, that the reason why I'm going to kill this person, this fetus, is because he's trying to kill the mother. Rambam, the Shulchan Aruch quotes the same thing. However, Im Hotzi Rosho, once the head emerges, and by the way, he says head, right? Rambam also says head. Mishnah didn't say head, right? Mishnah just said yatzarubo. So everyone is understanding this Mishnah as most of the baby, meaning the head of the baby, most of the head of the baby emerging. Anyways, you don't touch anymore. Why? Verbatim from the Rambam, right? Word for word, same exact thing, same exact logic. If we look at the Sma, which is on the left side, he comments, what does it mean? This is the natural process of the world, and therefore we don't interfere. It has to say this. On the left side. Sif Bet.
Right before the
yellow. Yeah. He says, the reason why he has to add on Zeotiv Osher Olam, because if he didn't give this justification of these are natural processes and therefore I cannot intervene, I would argue the same logic we made in the first part, which was once before labor began or before the baby started emerging, I had a concept of Rodef. I knew that this fetus was trying to kill the mother, therefore I killed it. So I would make the same case if the head starts popping out. And he says, however, you won't make that same argument because tivos shel olam, because it's the natural process. Kamashmanan, kimat shetivos shel olam bekach, en din rodef alav. Since this is, again, natural process, you don't have rodef. Ve'af al piken, even so, ve'odo ve'me'ea mutal lechotcho. So now let's go backwards. If tivos shel olam, what happened? Right? If tivos shel olam, once the head emerges, but it's not natural process before the head emerged, what's the difference? Be consistent. And he says, Afal pishu chai, even though he's considered alive, shekoshel yatzal avir olam, en shem nefesh alav. Anytime he did not emerge from the womb, or whatever stage of labor this is, there is no status of nefesh on this fetus, which, if you would note, is how what the language that the Mishnah used, right? Because the Mishnah in the beginning said, this thing is chayim, and then afterwards, that was when it was still inside. Once I came out, we said, "Ein dochin nefesh mipnei nefesh." We switched from nefesh to chayim.
So the sma is understanding the Rambam as applying the, is doing two things, making two moves. The first move is downgrading the pre-emergent fetus to something that's not a nefesh. The second is saying, even with that downgrade, you need another reason to permit, and that's because it's kirodev. But once you lose the first prong, the second prong isn't strong enough to call it a true rodev.
So I would change it slightly, as because the first part is what the Mishnah does, not what the Rambam does.
Well, the Rambam doesn't quote that part of the Mishnah.
Fact that it's nefesh versus...
Yeah, he's understanding what the Rambam must... To his point, is the Rambam just gives a reason. The reason is Rodef. But Rodef should apply equally to the pre-emergent and the post-emergent case. And so he's saying the way the Rambam understands the kind of Rodef situation we're dealing with is it's not a sufficiently high-grade Rodef to cover a nefesh, but it is enough to cover a pre-nefesh. That's what has... Right?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, he's reading into the Rambam the Mishnah, mm-hmm. even though the Rambam didn't explicitly say the Mishnah.
Otherwise, the Rambam has a problem. Why wouldn't?
What was the difference?
Why wouldn't Rodef apply both?
Sure. Fine. Granted. However, we still don't have a real definition, right? Which, by the way, just to make sure that we are aware of the conclusion, I don't think at any point in this sligya we're actually going to get a conclusion of what exactly is the difference between chayim, life, and nefesh, which we're, you know, arbitrarily calling soul for lack of a better word, right? What are the difference between these two things? That the first time around, I said, "Mother's life, chayim takes precedence over the fetus," versus the second time around, where I said, "Fetus's soul, mother's soul, don't touch anything." Right? Never really going to explain what those differences are. Okay. And he says, "V'haraya," and I can also prove to you if we keep reading in the Sma. I can prove to you that this thing inside of the woman only has a status of chayim, doesn't have a status of nefesh. Okay? Because, again, we have to try to figure out what those two things are, but if it's only chayim, there's it's a Mishnah.
No, this is the first in Mishpat,
it's a Mishnah. It's a pasuk in Mishpat. That if a person hits a, you hit a pregnant woman, and you cause her to miscarry, you do not have to pay. You're not chai misa.
Right?
It's not a capital punishment. What do you have to do instead? You have to pay whatever sum of money we say a fetus is worth, right? And he just says this is some sort of monetary compensation, but. You see that this thing's not actually considered alive, or at least a human life, or a nefesh. Because if it's a nefesh, you would obviously be, we put you to death for killing this fetus. So clearly there's a difference. So again, proving my point from last week, which is chayim, is, you know, plants are also alive. You know, animals are also alive. People are not just alive, we are also nefesh. There's like some higher category there.
But there's also, is there also an understanding that, like, that it could be considered, I guess, murder, but for which there is not a capital punishment. So, like, where, if there, you know, there's a, I guess, a monetary penalty when there's both, then obviously the capital punishment takes precedence. So that's, right, the argument over why they're, that's one side, right? Someone's saying, okay, well, it's not a life, and then, but isn't there another, I guess, opinion? I don't remember who, where I heard it, that it is considered murder. It's just not a, you don't get a capital punishment. Maybe someone trying to line it up with, like, the Noahide laws, like, where it's considered a capital punishment, and, like, the, you know, that...
You're a whole bunch of steps ahead of me.
Okay.
You're way ahead of me. Okay. I'm still just... I'm building us up from the... I just want to show where the sugya comes from, where what all the different opinions are discussing what they're talking about. Right. So we're still... Okay. We'll get there, but you're ahead of us right now. You're okay. Still ahead. All right? So we're still... we're still dealing just with... we'll take one thing at a time, we'll get there. But you're right. That is a position. Okay. So, again, so you see there's clearly a difference. Nefesh and Chayim. If we turn to the other Gemara, this is not really so important to talk about now, but we'll see. Well, at least we'll point out what you just mentioned, right? On this side over here, Tosfot quotes the Afagav. It's in the middle of talking about something else. It's a long Tosfot, but in the middle of this Tosfot, the highlighted part, he says, "V'Afagav de Ben Noach neherag alo ubrim kedam ahasam Yisrael elon neherag ni de pater." Right, a Ben Noach, a non-Jew who kills a fetus, would get killed for killing this fetus. However, a Jew would not get killed on it. He's a potter. A, again, emphasizing the point that from a Jewish perspective, at least a Jew, if he kills a fetus, you are not chayiv misa for that. There's no capital punishment for killing a fetus because, again, as we just mentioned, it's not considered an actual soul. However, a Ben Noach would get killed for killing a fetus, which is not necessarily that big of a deal. I mean, I'm sure for him it is. But from our perspective, it's not necessarily as big of a deal because a Ben Noach that does anything wrong is chayiv misa for anything that they do wrong. It's not necessarily an indication that this is something that is so severe that it deserves capital punishment. It's just because, you know, whatever logic you want to use of why Ben Noach gets killed for any avera that they do.
Is Tosfot talking about the same case where it's a woman who is in difficulty in labor or just in generally aborting?
This Tosfot is a general, it's not specific. Okay. I think most of these cases are going to be, though, probably labor-oriented cases.
So no, I think that in this case, right. I mean, the Tosfot's referring to understanding of a shovet hadam adam be'adam. So you have the pacify in Noach, which right seems to fairly specifically call out a capital punishment for the taking of a life within a life, mm-hmm. which is mm-hmm. understood as being referenced to a prohibition of abortion, and that seems to be directly contradicted by the pasuk mishpatim that you know, a person causes the unwanted termination of a pregnancy through a violent action is it owes money, and
there are various differences between the two in terms of mens rea and whatnot, but that's a different discussion.
Right. This might be what you were saying, but I also have a question about that because it seems like in the scenario where like a pregnant woman's getting in the middle of two people fighting, it's not like they're intending it so to hurt her. So that I wondered if that has anything.
Well,
to
do.
That's a different case.
That's a different case. Okay. That's the Kant case.
But again, so the main point of bringing this Tosfot up here, there's a whole other sugya we'll have to talk at one point about whether or not just because if a Ben Noach, if there's a general principle in the Gemara, which we're not talking about, but there's a general principle in the Gemara. We have a general principle that if Malim Kedusha Ve'emoridin, right, so the Jewish people before Har Sinai have a status of some sort of Ben Noach with potentially a couple of other mitzvahs along the way that we picked up, right? So Jews have a couple of other mitzvahs. At Har Sinai, we get the Torah. Now we get a whole bunch of other commandments, right? Now, most of the mitzvot are repeated. Some are not. What happened to the ones that were not repeated? Does that mean that we are not obligated in them anymore? Or does it mean, of course, if a Ben Noach was obligated in them, we would also be obligated in them? That's not what we're talking about right now. But that's the point for the Benoach. For the Benoach point, the question then would be, since I might have a source for abortion for a Benoach, does that same source apply to us once we become Jews? Or maybe it's also because of some other reason, which again, maybe that's what changes the stakes from capital punishment to maybe some sort of monetary payment, or maybe it's not something at all, right? That would be the that would be what we'd have to figure out. Sedo? All right. We next, on the next page, we have another Mishnah that also points to the fact that this thing maybe is not actually considered, this fetus is not actually something that's considered alive, right? So we just had this, we just to point out what we did, right? We had the Rambam, who's basically sounds like he's calling this thing alive, right? The Shulchan Aruch quotes the Rambam the same way, right? So we have Rambam and Shulchan Aruch. We just quoted this to us, so it makes it sound like a Jew is not, it's not a nefesh, right? For a Jewish perspective, at least. Maybe Noach, for whatever reason, is an exception. But from a Jewish perspective, this thing is not actually considered alive. It's, maybe there's something else wrong, but we're not talking about murder when we're talking about aborting. Those are not the same things. This is a different conversation. This Mishnah over here tells me, a woman is, she's supposed to be killed for whatever reason. She was Mechalel Shabbat, whatever. We have to go kill, this woman is getting the death penalty, and she's pregnant. En mamtin la chetelet, we do not wait until she gives birth. However, a woman, once she sits on the labor bed, when she's ready to give birth, she's already getting contractions or, I don't know, whatever stage that is, at that point we wait until she gives birth, and then we would kill her. So let's think about this, right? So far, our distinctions have been pre-head emerging, post-head emerging, right? Right now, we got another distinction, which is a little bit earlier on, right? We have pre-pangs of labor, and now we have labor, right? Those are our distinctions. It's already interesting. Rashi explains to me, "Eimamtin la cheteled." I don't have to wait until she gives birth. Ella hogin vladaima. We kill her with her fetus. Why? Dechad gufahu. This is one body. When I put this woman to death, I will kill her. I'm also killing her right arm, and I'm killing her left arm, because it's all part of her, and her whole body has to get this capital punishment. And the same thing is true with this little thing that's growing inside of her abdomen. Inside of her uterus, she has a fetus. That's part of her body. And therefore, just like I'm killing the rest of her, I also will be killing the fetus. However, Rashi says, "Mamtin la achetelad." Why do I, once she's starting to give birth, once she's has some sort of deliver, once she's in the delivery stages, why do I wait? Kiven de akal v'namim kamo gufa chinehu. Once the fetus already got displaced from the uterus to some degree, again, we don't know exactly what stage this is, then we can already say it's a different body, it's a separate body. This is not the same person as the mother, and therefore we would have to wait. At no point in this conversation are we discussing Chaim versus Nefesh. We're not discussing...
Well, you're not trading here.
Correct, no, we're not trading. Rodefune makes sense, right. but if you tell me that this thing is its own Nefesh, right? Assuming Nefesh is the higher standard, right? So if this thing is its own Nefesh, then maybe I don't kill the mother, and I kill the... maybe I don't kill the fetus, because the fetus is its own special status.
I mean, you could try to square the two.
Okay, go for it.
I mean, you could say so. It doesn't matter what living status. Once you ascribe any separate living status to the fetus, chayim or nefesh, it's not a chayiv in the death penalty of an unrelated person. So whether it's not, it's so we prior to emergence, the Mishnah did refer to the vlad as a chayiv.
So, okay,
which is. Not which you would never refer to your right arm as a separate living anything from you.
Okay, but so, then what?
So you're saying that so that might be sufficient. That unlike a situation where I have to make a priority call. Who am I prioritizing? The mother, the pre-emergent fetus. The Mishnah says you prioritize the mother. In this case, I don't have to make a priority call. I have to make a decision whether the independent life of the pre-emergent fetus, regardless of its status from a nefesh perspective, deserves the same, gets any weight at all.
It's get close to a viability argument.
Right, so now you're saying, so you're saying that at this point, that it's, you use the Lashon of Mishnah in Chulin, it's a chai, and it's an independent chai, and so it's not chayiv in the punishment of this other person.
But then what if you have like a virus in your body? Like something else living in your body that's like a separate, you know, maybe I don't know if they would be referred to as like a chayim in that same sense, but like would that be a similar like thing that we have to that you have to distinguish then if you're taking that?
I think we generally allow ourselves to terminate.
Well, we do, like in practice. I'm just trying to take your explanation and like take it to the next, you know.
But if you look at viability, the virus is not viable outside, nor is the bacteria usually. But once the fetus, once she's ready to give birth, there may be a viability argument as opposed to, hey, it's killing the mom.
I was just trying to focus on the rabbi said we're not talking nefesh or chayim, but I think that you don't have to, right? You could say that this is entirely within the realm of the discussion of a chaya, that the Rashi is saying prior to labor, it's not even.
Oh, that's what you're doing. Okay, well, hold on. Now I got what you're saying. So you want to make the case
that my dog is a separate body from me, and it's right, but it's not a person. There's that you can conceptualize that Rashi is saying that there's a that there's a separate body that we only have the conversation of waiting until you have a separate body. Once you have a separate body, now it's worth discussing. Is it worth waiting for the separate body to get clear of the danger zone?
Completely honest, I've not thought about it at all. It's a fascinating point, right? Now, you see what he just did? He separated our Mishnah and Olo to a very specific subset, right? So he says that our Mishnah, that there's two, there's pre-labor and post-labor. Pre-labor, this thing is, according to Rashi at least, this thing is just part of the body. Whatever this fetus is, it's part of the woman's body. Post-labor, I now have two different categories. I have pre-head emerging, post-head emerging. Pre-head emerging, this thing is chaya. Post-head emerging, this thing is nefesh. So pre-head emerging, chaya, we say, chayim of the mother precedes chayim of the ubal. Post-head emerging, we say, nefesh of the... Endoch and nefesh, ne nefesh, and nefesh of the mother or nefesh of the fetus, neither one can... it's teva and whatever. There's no priority. How do you fit this into your Rambam then? Go all the way. While you're at it,
how do I fit this into the Rambam? Well,
because the Rambam doesn't tell me chayim, right?
This case is completely irrelevant to the Rambam, to the Rambam's case, right?
So what's the Rambam talking about? Right? The Rambam also is talking about only in a post-labor scenario. Yeah. No, not a single person here, according to the way we're reading this, you're reading this Mishnah. Nobody here is. This Mishnah is talking about all pre-labor. Everything, all the minor comments that we saw up until now were post-labor. This is all pre-labor scenario.
This is the first pre-labor scenario. Yeah.
It's the first, which means, according to your reading, nobody disagrees with the Rambam. The only question is, nobody agrees, meaning, the Rambam agrees to Rashi, that nobody would argue that there is an isser of killing a fetus before labor.
You can't make that inference from the language of the Rambam.
You have no idea what he says.
You have no idea what he says.
You also can't make that inference from the Mishnah because it's not talking about that. That's not the Mishnah's case. Right. So it's not the Rambam's case.
This is the only pre-labor case.
Pashup Shah, reading the Mishnah. We're reading the Mishnah up until now. We're reading the Rambam up until now. Is that there are two categories, right? Pre-head emerging, post-head emerging. You're giving me three categories.
Right.
There is pre-labor, and then within labor, there's pre-head emerging, post-head emerging.
Yeah, that's the
Mishnah doesn't talk about pre-labor.
Yeah, those are the three cases of the Mishnah.
Breach. What do you want? In other words,
the last thing to emerge is the head.
So in that case, we talked about this a little bit last week as well, and it's not your fault; it's my fault for not sending you the recording. But the audio wasn't so good. But the breach delivery, then the idea might be that it's most of the body. Maybe it's not most of the head at that point, right? If we're trying to qualify, at what point do we call this thing born? So then it might be most of the body might be enough. Maybe it's not head. Although nobody after the Mishnah talks about breach delivery. It could very well be because breach delivery just means the mother was going to die anyway. Like, there was no... It was just... The story was over. This woman's dead. Or the baby's dead. Or both are dead.
Or both. Yeah.
Which might have happened more often than not. So this is Mishnah here, and I think it's very fascinating. I especially like this reading over here. But it's a very interesting way of another piece to the puzzle. Now, what ends up being very fascinating as well is, since we're quoting Rishonim here, so far we have two Rishonim, right? We have classical understanding, we have two Rishonim. We have the Rambam that tells me that even pre-head emerging, there is an Isser here. This thing is basic, is potentially, depending again on how you read the Rambam, but a potential, going to the Rambam, this thing's actually considered alive. This is a good thing, some sort of quasi-murder at least. And then there's...
It's a being.
It's a being of sorts. Mm, okay. And then we have Rashi, which is, you know, this is like doing some sort of, I don't know, cosmetic surgery. It's cutting off a limb. Maybe it's an Isser Chabala. Then, what would the logic be? You're wounding yourself maybe when you cut this thing out, when you kill this thing, but nothing more than that. There is interesting Ma'arit. And what's more interesting is not necessarily the Ma'arit as much as what Rav Moshe decides to do with the Ma'arit. So Ma'arit's also a Rishon. And the Ma'arit has two tshuvas. One is in Shalat Tzadi Zayin, and the other one is two tshuvot later in Shalat Tzadi Tet. In Shalat Tzadi Zayin,
that's one that looks like this.
Yeah. Oh yeah, the one that looks like this. We're working on page numbers. He wants to know about Ober, is it considered Yelach Ima or not considered Yelach Ima? I didn't give you that Gemara, but that's another one. The Gemara discusses whether or not a fetus is considered... A fetus is considered the basically part of the mother, or is it considered a separate entity? This is a part of a conversation, if I recall correctly, about whether or not she can, when a woman goes to the mikvah, let's say she's geolit, if she goes to the mikvah, no, that's not the sug, is it? I don't remember what the sug is exactly. The question is it considered yelachimo? Not considered yelachimo. Is it considered just yelach, like the
limb,
thigh. Is it considered Yerachimah or not considered Yerachimah? In other words, just another limb, or is it not considered a limb? It's its own entity.
And this is for an issue, you might have to expand that, in, that even though the water never gets there, internal obstructions are problematic for...
Yeah. So, that's the mikvah. Yeah, I don't want to get bogged down with details. Okay, but that's basically the question. Now, it says, in the first tshuva over here, he rejects the idea that a fetus is considered its own life form. He says, a fetus, it's an Isser, maybe an Isser Chabala. Then, therefore, it's not considered its own life entity, and it's not considered a problem. In the second tshuva, in Tzadi Tet, he argues that this thing is considered a separate life. And this thing, if you kill it, it is some form of quasi-murder. In the first tshuva, he makes it sound like it's just wounding, which is potentially the implication that we get from Rashi. Because Rashi previously argued, right, that this thing is just considered part of the woman's body. Very similar argument. It's yelachimo. Therefore, if you kill this thing, you are not chayv misa. It's just any other, like, wounding, whatever, you know. You're not allowed to wound yourself, but the stakes aren't as high. And if you have a good reason to wound yourself, then you can wound yourself. Whereas in the other tshuva, it makes it sound like it's actual murder. Much closer to the Rambam's read. So what do you do? I have a Rishon that is literally soter itself from himself, within two tshuvot. So Moshe Feinstein has a very simple solution to this problem. Moshe Feinstein loves doing this one. And what does he do?
He says that the first one is
a Mizuyaf is one of his Talmidim who probably didn't know what he was talking about, wrote the first one. So that one's wrong, and the second one's right.
Nice.
It's a good solution. It solves your problem. It's also, what?
And the evidence for that is?
He likes the second one more than the first.
He likes the second. It's good. I mean, it's good.
He doesn't think, because again, within Rav Moshe Feinstein's worldview, he doesn't think that it makes any sense at all to argue that killing a fetus is not considered murder. Mm-hmm. He thinks that it does consider murder. So anyone that disagrees with that it doesn't make sense that he's disagreeing with that. So he said it has to be. There's no other logical conclusion other than the first tshuva is mezuyaf. It's a forgery. It's not really the ma'arit. The point being that from the context of so far of what we have, of the Ma'ari Mekomot that we have here, is we see at least the beginnings of what the future discussions are going to be. And that is, when you think about abortion and halacha, what exactly are the stakes here? Are we talking about something that's rodef in the rodef world? Is it something that's potentially quasi-murder? Or is it something that's just considered wounding? Easiest way to make that argument is machlokes Rambam and Rashi, and then Ma'arit, it's a machlokes within himself, possibly, maybe not, about whether or not which position he holds like. There is a third option in all of this, which we haven't yet discussed, that's going to be next times, and that is Hotzat Zera Levatala, is that maybe there's another Isser over here of Ashchatat Zera, there's another Isser of killing sperm. The question is, a little bit fascinating, it's a little bit weird, because the source for the Isser and the severity of the Isser of killing sperm is really from Agarata sources. It's not classical halachic sources. The problem is that Beit Yosef quotes it. Rabbi Yosef Karo quotes it when he's actually writing his halacha sefer. Once he quotes it in a halacha sefer, then it becomes part of normative halachic discussion, in which case it's also a factor that we would have to consider. And then we'd have to question, what is levatala mean? What exactly does it mean by wasting? But that is the next part of the puzzle. I do want to, since we are giving like the summary, I also want to point out this this distinction that you made here now, is, I think it's great, is maybe there's also a difference here. It's not so clear that the difference here is just pre-head emerging, post-head emerging. Maybe also the fact that it's pre-labor, post-labor, and then within labor, pre-head emerging, post-head emerging, I think is a very interesting point that I'll have to think about more and see whether or not I can find any sources pro or anti that that argument.
Yeah, yeah. I know you didn't bring it, but the Shulchan Aruch does paskin that the like the Mishnah in what's it called? No, not the one. The one in it's what's the this is Sanhedrin, right?
No, the Mishnah. Wait a minute, this one, the Olad Mishnah.
No, this one here. The mission about the capital murder.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that's probably just the Rambam, right? It's not the Mishnah. That's
not it. Yeah, that's the Rambam, right?
Matnin. No, this is the Mishnah. No, the Rambam posted passages like that, not Shulchan
Aruch. Well, we didn't look at that Rambam.
Right.
And Shulchan Aruch and the Rambam both passed like this mission also.
I don't think Shulchan Aruch. I don't think passing. Shulchan Aruch just doesn't talk about Misa Bezdin, right? I don't think Shulchan Aruch talks about.
But the Rambam passes this way.
Yeah, I mean, according to the letters, he does.
Okay.
Right, because there's a small letter there, and it goes there, so it's probably the Rambam passing like this Mishnah. But the Rambam passing like this Mishnah, but Shulchan Aruch doesn't talk about Misa Bezdin.
So however you understand the Rambam, if the Rambam doesn't understand this Mishnah the way Rashi understands this Mishnah, you have to figure out how does the Rambam understand this Mishnah. Because the Rambam
can't, right, what would the Rambam, how would the Rambam can't phrase
the
it?
The reason that you're allowed to kill the Vlad in this case is Rodesh.
Correct. Here, no, right, correct. Again, it's again because he's in easy justification for it without looking at the Rambam, without bringing the Rambam here, but if you want, we could look at it more closely next time as well, is that you would have to argue that the Ubal in this situation is just because it's still within quasi Chayah, let's call it, even though the Rambam doesn't use that term. It's chaya, not nefesh. If it's within the status of chaya, then we can still kill it. It gets the same death penalty that the mother gets. It does not yet, as Rashi puts it, akal v'na. It hasn't yet, you know, moved out of the uterus. It still gets the same, whatever punishment the woman gets, whatever conversion the woman gets, the fetus will get as well.
Yeah, it still makes a very complicated structure.
Makes it complicated, yes.
Right? Yeah. If you want to hold it in every other situation, the Rambam is going to hold it pre-labor termination is Asr Mishum Ritzicha.
Yes. Quasi Ritzicha. But yes. Okay. Excellent. And also, we didn't mention the Ben Noach thing. We also have to talk about that, as you mentioned.
Yeah.
The difference between whether and what happened exactly pre-Har Sinai, post-Har Sinai, with the whole Ben Noach thing. That's also something we have to discuss. And I think after that, we'd have all of our basic sources, and then we can actually look at the Tshuvot and see what the contemporary, or relatively contemporary, rabbinic authorities have done with these Gemaras and see how, you know, all this actually plays out in the halachic discussion. All right. Thank you, everybody, for coming.